Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and today I've got Aaron Lammer of CoinTalk with me. He's going to come chat. Hey, man, how you doing?
Good. I love to be on the stream. I love to be on your stream.
Well, we are not live streaming, but I am attempting to record this so that I can get something to YouTube, which I'm really bad at doing. So I've been testing ways to do that. You would think, you know, this like media stuff would be pretty easy to figure out, but it's still pretty annoying.
You just mentioned that Bitcoin was dumping, and in this era of Bitcoin, basically anytime I see, sometimes I'll leave my blockfolio on my Bitcoin value, and if my Bitcoin value is going up, that usually means that Bitcoin is dumping.
It is like, indeed.
I have not gotten any relief from positive alt movements in quite some time. The only time my Bitcoin value ever goes up is when people are dumping Bitcoin as quickly as they can.
Yeah, it's been interesting because, you know, we got an inverse correlation back. So for a long time, there was this positive correlation between Bitcoin and altcoins. So if Bitcoin went up, altcoins went up, and then altcoin to Bitcoin value went up a little bit. And then when they went down, altcoins got demolished more so than Bitcoin. And it was pretty, it was a little challenging to trade, but basically like you could buy Ethereum, and if Bitcoin went up, Ethereum would go up a little bit more, that type of thing.
Yep. I think I described altcoins when I got into crypto as basically just Bitcoin on steroids. You know,
yes.
Bigger gains, bigger losses. It's just the more volatile game.
But right now, it's actually worse than that, because when Bitcoin goes up, altcoins aren't going up more. They're, you know, going up a little bit relative to the dollar, but they're getting crushed relative to Bitcoin. And when Bitcoin goes down, altcoins are going down a little bit, but not as much as Bitcoin, and gaining a little bit of Bitcoin value, but they're still going down, and therefore Tether becomes the best altcoin in the market.
Well, additionally, and I'm curious, maybe we'll talk about that this week, that series of cycles has really pushed, like, some of these altcoins without a actual crash are lower than I ever could have imagined them going in a crash, just because they've been losing a little bit of value, what feels like both directions.
Yes. Yeah. They're basically, they've been an inefficient Bitcoin derivative, I guess. So like they've just not very been successful. You'd be better off just trying to trade Bitcoin with a little bit of margin rather than trying to increase your Bitcoin from trading altcoins, which is historically the best use case. So I just pulled up a chart, and we can talk about this a little bit, but you can see if people know like the Bitcoin dominance chart, if you're on TradingView, it's total two is all altcoin dominance. So it's all everything but Bitcoin and dollar value. And if you divide that by Bitcoin, you're getting a chart of Bitcoin dominance. When you look at that on weekly, it's been a downhill game since January 2018, which anyone with altcoin exposure understands. But what's worse is like there's basically been small, very rare up moves and very large down moves. We're at a place that's really interesting to me, Aaron, because as sentiment is terrible, we're at the 200-week moving average. So this is basically, if you were to say, hey, let's look at the Bitcoin chart, that's where Bitcoin bottomed. So this is the 200-week Bitcoin moving average. So now we're at the altcoin dominance 200-week moving average. So it's a rational place to start seeing this trend of altcoins getting crushed all the time to start reversing.
So I have a question about that, just because you're my knowledgeable trader of record. So I don't know what it's at right now. I don't know what the scale is there, but within the last week or so, Bitcoin dominance was at about 61%. And yeah. I heard a lot of people throwing around this 65% figure, basically saying, if Bitcoin crosses 65%, like start digging the altcoin graves. It's all over for the alt market if Bitcoin crosses 65%. Is that 65% some sort of a rolling average? Is it some sort of a historical thing? Why are people so voodoo-ish about the 65% mark?
Sure. Yeah, that's a different chart. The one I'm charting, the actual value that you see is less relevant because it's a kind of a market cap scenario. So the axis is funky.
Right. Different sets of coins being counted in the whole, the 100, what 100% constitutes.
Yeah, there's a chart on, I know it's on CoinMarketCap, and even though I don't really like CoinMarketCap, this chart is the one that everybody loves to reference. And it looks like they're doing their best to make it hard to find. Anyway, it's got this like layered thing that people would recognize where it's, you know, Bitcoin market cap and altcoin market cap, and it creates this dominance chart. And the 65% thing is really just, it's like breaking, it'd be Bitcoin dominance breaking back, like it'd be undoing all of 2017. Okay. So it's the good and proper death of altcoins. Whereas right now, since I can't find that one, even where we are in terms of like relative levels, they're still a long way down. Like you could go to pre-2017 levels and it's a long way away.
Well, I would also note, like, I also feel like alts are in the toilet. Like, anecdotally, they're in the toilet. I can tell they're in the toilet, both based on their fiat and Bitcoin prices. But, you know, ETH was trading above $300 a few days ago. It's not like there's no like fiat room to fall below here. There's plenty of places to crash. I mean, we're just kind of assuming that these assets will in some ways hold some value against Bitcoin. Like, what would a free fall look like for you? Like, what do you expect the ground beneath here looks like as a trader?
Yeah, so if you're talking about it, there's different metrics here, and this is what I've been trying to talk about recently when I do market analysis videos. Obviously, Bitcoin could go down, like it's 3x'd from the bottom. Yeah. And altcoins have done what I would say is like just kind of floated up alongside. And therefore, they could also go down a lot relative to the dollar. The punishing thing would be that if you were overweight in altcoins during this move, you would not have received the benefits, all the benefits of Bitcoin going up, but your dollar value would have been going up. So if you say like, okay, well, relative to, I don't know, like the regular stock market, you've still done okay because, you know, it's gone up. It's like doubled on the year, but you're just watching your Bitcoin value go down, and you're probably in crypto because you like Bitcoin, and then you found yourself in altcoins, so you're like getting less Bitcoin.
Yeah, just as your awareness that Bitcoin is like what's important finally comes to you, you realize you don't have very much of it.
Right, because you were holding altcoins instead of Bitcoin.
Yeah, so, and you'll probably always think about your entry in terms of fiat to Bitcoin prices. Like if you buy in and you buy a bunch of altcoins and Bitcoin, you will remember your Bitcoin entry price, and you will always think about how much Bitcoin you could have bought if you had just bought all Bitcoin at that point.
Exactly. And so in your scenario, you know, altcoin market cap, if you look at here, let's say it lost like 40%. Well, it could get to that reduction faster than Bitcoin. So like, let's say we went from a 13.8K high on Bitcoin and we said that was the top, we're going down and we're going to chill for a long while, you know, re-enter some form of bear market. Well, if altcoins outpaced that, after they lagged all the way up, now they could lag all the way down, meaning they dump faster than Bitcoin and you lose even more Bitcoin, but now everybody's dollar value is going down and like you just get wrecked again. That is the downside scenario. The upside scenario is Bitcoin, you know, it consolidates, but it stays up here and people are looking for returns and they say, okay, we're going to go over here and we're going to bet on altcoins. In that scenario is when you can possibly have like some kind of alt season or, you know, relative relative benefits for altcoins. And the problem so far is that there's just not really been good evidence of it. This is Ethereum relative to Bitcoin just kind of looks like it keeps banging on the floor here, like it wants to fall through. And in that scenario, that would probably happen either because Bitcoin continues to go up really fast and Ethereum can't keep up, or Bitcoin drops really fast and Ethereum drops even harder because people escape everything, especially altcoins. So there's two scenarios where Ethereum just looks worse and worse, and people are seeing that and they're running away. The third scenario is Bitcoin consolidates or moves slowly, basically, and people look for returns in altcoins. And that's the scenario that everybody that has altcoin exposure is hoping for and looking for, meaning that they have this big upside. Like, you know, Ethereum goes to $450 while Bitcoin stays like under $13,000 or whatever.
This is more or less like, I think Mike Novogratz said he sold some, Mike Novogratz said that he sold some above 13,000, which he sold more above 13,000, would rebuy at 10,000 and was expecting ranging for a period between 10 and 14,000. So if I told you that Bitcoin narrative was true, that some people sold the top, rebuying around 10,000, we hang around right now, we're right around 11,000. Let's say I told you at the end of the summer, we had bounced around between the 10,000 to 14,000 range. You would expect then that alts had done well against Bitcoin during that period?
Yes. My expectation would be if Bitcoin truly can maintain $10,000 to $14,000, there will be some really bloody times in alts during that, because Bitcoin will still have volatile days. But after that period, if you like zoom out and look at what happened here for altcoins during that time, you would end up seeing a whole lot of nothing from Bitcoin. And Bitcoin, you know, people talk about even in bull markets, Bitcoin goes down 25-30% all the time. Well, that's basically what we got, just barely, for a very short amount of time. But we went to almost 13.9 and we went down to like 9,700 or so, which was just under about a 30% move down if you snagged both sides of it. Of course, nobody did. But the idea now is to say, hey, what's it going to take to make a really big move down to go below like 9,600 where it got bought up last time? And that would take us to like 8K. That's your everything's doomed scenario, because you go from where we are now at 11K, you're already going to 96, 9700, but that's not where you're stopping. You're going to 8200. Now you just lost a nice chunk. Your altcoins got destroyed during that. But if it gets bought up above 10K, 10.2, 10.3 is kind of my personal zone, you're still making a higher low on Bitcoin, and everything just kind of slows down. Because you didn't get above 12K again to go retest the highs, et cetera. And basically, you're just coiling up like a spring and in this no man's land, and that gives altcoins an opportunity to perform. That's what everybody that's got altcoin exposure wants. Now, then there's some stuff that you could look at that you could say is a weather vane of sorts. One of them is everybody's favorite cryptocurrency, especially like legacy markets that like to make fun of crypto, which is Doge. Aaron, did you see that Doge was listed on Binance?
I did not see that.
Doge was listed on Binance.
Is that spike we're seeing there?
That's
no?
That's what this daily spike is. Intraday, it went up to 44 Satoshis. Started the day at 28. So Doge busted a 70% plus move, at least intraday, and now it's chilling at like 34. So it's retraced some of it. But a lot of people say that crypto cycles are defined by Dogecoin. And it's been
that real? That's true? People say that?
People say that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The real OGs say, you know, like, we can't have alt season until Dogecoin creates its bottom and gives us permission.
I'm going to confess that if you had asked me, I would have thought that Doge was already on Binance. I feel like Doge went mainstream like a while ago. Like, I thought Doge was everywhere. Can't you buy Doge with fiat some places?
Yes, but think about Binance, Aaron. Binance has long had pay to play.
Okay. Say no more.
Yeah. So if you can't pay up, then you don't get listed. And very few coins have been outside of that. That's also likely the reason that Tezos is not on Binance, because Tezos has a lot of investor and trader interest, but it's not on Binance. And that's because the Tezos Foundation is probably scared to death to do something as bold as pay for a exchange listing.
It kind of makes Binance seem like the like Yelp of the crypto exchange world, like just a predator preying upon its own B2B base.
I think that's actually a really good comparison, because, like, obviously Binance is not just operating in the interest of valuable coins. Sure, they're for that, but you also have to be willing to pony up. That's been the speculation as to why something like Doge has not been on Binance. Because of all coins, like, Doge is not a security. Doge is Doge, you know. It's a true cryptocurrency. No one controls it. The founder hates it. Like, what better token to be a non-security than the one that the guy that created it now thinks it's absurd?
Well, this is something we talked about on Coin Talk either last week or the week before. And I know you are a listener to Coin Talk, so I can just go right into it without re-explaining myself to you. The exchanges are clearly rooting for altcoins. Like, in this weird, like, everyone's biased world, there's a clear bias on the part of all of these exchanges in favor of alts against Bitcoin. So in that realm, are you surprised at all that someone like Binance is still nickel and diming coins to get listed? Like, shouldn't a Binance be aggressively seeking to have a Tezos on its platform to try to expand the alt market and push back that Bitcoin dominance?
I think, I think you're probably right. I think they do benefit greatly from altcoins being on their platforms. They benefit from trading volume and trading transactions to occur. So I think there is a discrepancy there for Binance. Like, they should be protecting their users. So it's kind of double-sided. I'll put it that way. Like,
well, they should have Tezos on there, and they should not have some of these shitcoins on there.
Yes, I would say that Tezos is less of a shitcoin than many projects on Binance. I'd put it that way.
Doge is less of a shitcoin than many projects on Binance.
Yeah, by far, because, like, Doge is controlled by people who mined it fairly or bought it fairly, and it wasn't like a big pre-mine or anything like that that people take advantage of, or an ICO where people are in control of everything. Binance has just gotten away with a lot because all the volume is there, so therefore doing things like having seven-figure prices to trade on their exchange was well within reason. I'm not as much of a Binance bull as other people, I'll put it that way. I think Binance faces a whole lot of risks. You know, they're trying to do this Binance US thing. Have you heard of this?
No.
So they kicked off they're kicking off American users. They're sunsetting us Americans from being on their platform. And they're going to guide us towards Binance US. It's under this acronym of BAM, or BAM Trading is the operator. And they're thinking that they can have an independent entity that is related to Binance, but it's not Binance, and that'll be where they steer U.S. persons. The thing is,
kind of like how Libra is not Facebook.
Yes, exactly. It's like Libra is not Facebook, and I want to dig into Libra with you, because the Coin Talk show has turned into the Libra podcast.
We are the official podcast of Libra.
Yeah, so I want to talk about that in a minute, but first, this Binance U.S. thing. Like, to me, all the reasons people loved Binance was you have access to high liquidity shitcoins that aren't elsewhere, and they don't care if it's a security or not. They'll list it as long as somebody pays up. That was the whole point. Like, you get access to all these ICOs pretty soon after they list. There's no way they can do that in America. Like, look at all the exchanges that have dealt with all these regulation issues. They're not going to be able to differentiate themselves, in my mind. So anything they do in the U.S., it's going to be hard to stand out from, like, Coinbase Pro or whatever.
Well, not only can they not do that in a regulatory context, is there a market for shitcoin ICOs anymore? Like, it seems to me that one of their bread and butter products, which they were getting paid both on the trading fees and also for all of these ICOs signing up, as you said, seven figures. My impression was that that whole world is kind of done.
Well, there's the IEO now. The initial exchange.
Oh, you were talking about the IEOs of the future. Yeah. So is that happening? Are, like, people dumping money into IEOs?
Yeah, to a degree, I think it's happening.
Like, what's the craziest IEO so far?
I don't know what the craziest ones, but the charts all look the same. So here's one that I just pulled up. This is called Fetch. And, you know, actually, I'll give Fetch a little bit of credit. It's really an interesting project, if you don't account for the fact that they sold 6% of tokens in the IEO. So 94% of the tokens are either controlled by the founders or in some 50-year lockup plan or who knows what. But they sold 6% of the tokens, and it just immediately got super wrecked relative to Bitcoin. Let's see what it did relative to the dollar. Relative to the dollar, I think that it might still be up or sideways. I think all of the prices it's at, like for these 14 cents, I think that's still maybe higher than like what it was sold for. So if you bought the IEO, you'd be up in dollars, maybe. Let's look up that price, Aaron, because this is an example. Shoot. So I can't find it, but yeah,
it looked on that Tether chart like it was wrecked against the dollar.
Yeah, so it sold, the IEO was for about 8.4 cents. So it's still up on an IEO basis, but yeah, something to consider there.
Okay, so to me, I just don't think that Binance is ever going to get back the juice they had during the ICO mega boom. I just don't think it's going to happen.
So it seems
like they've taken that and been like, okay, well, what's the next super profitable scheme? What about we pump our own coin and we create this economy around the BNB token where it's, you get free BNB, you get discounts with BNB. I don't know why. I'm not going to follow too closely exactly how BNB works. It just doesn't super interest me. But how do you read that? Like, would you buy BNB?
No, I'm also bearish BNB, which is a little bit of a contra play, like a contrarian play, because most people, they look at BNB and they say, well, look how amazing it's done. I look at it and I see something that is a little bit topish.
I look at it and go, I get that it was a cool thing to speculate on. What do the next 3 years of BNB trading look like? A lot of these Binance ploys, I feel like, have like a 6-month shelf life. That's kind of what would make me worried about holding a big BNB bag.
Yeah. My thing is, I just think it's done so well already that the upside is tough. Now, they're trying to build a ton of stuff. So they've got their DEX thing. They're introducing margin trading. I just think there's a lot of risks for Binance Coin because it's definitely a security, and they're also trying to walk into the U.S. and say we have a U.S.-friendly exchange. I don't think U.S. regulators are going to love that because they're going to like say, well, what about all the stuff you've been doing, blatantly been a security, and whatever they come up with is not going to be great, in my opinion. I want to give you a spoiler alert, Aaron.
Yeah.
Not only am I bearish Binance Coin, but you know Ari Paul, he has a fund.
Yeah.
They did a competition on like submit your ideas for a trade, and the reward was for up to 2 Bitcoin to the best idea. and you could go long or short, and you have to submit this little paper on like your idea. And I actually submitted an idea for it, and I had not said yet what it was, but my thesis was a short thesis for B&B. So we'll see how that plays out. But if I win, I would win 2 Bitcoin.
What's your narrative in sharding BNB there? I mean, I feel like I like that play just as an amateur in that I actually believe exchanges, other than the super mega Coinbases that are backed by like VC, I actually believe any of these exchanges are capable of collapsing at any time. Like, I think Binance could go down in a hack, it could go down in a scandal, it could go down in regulation. You can fill in the blank. But like, if you're going to make a ton of money, if you just bet like Binance to fuck up in the next year, not a bad bet.
Yes. And that's you're narrowing down a good bit of what my thesis was. But basically, I was saying all the good stuff is pretty well priced in to BNB, and all the risks and bad stuff is a threat. And I don't think that it's going to be as easy for them to differentiate themselves. And the other reason, the other part of the thesis was that I would guess most funds are long the majority of tokens, so Bitcoin plus other stuff. And to me, short BNB is also a decent hedge against the long thesis for other tokens and other ideas.
Well, so you I could feel say like the other,
sorry, as a hedge, like you get stopped out, and that's okay. You know, you're still long other stuff. But if the market goes to crap, or you know, Binance faces regulatory issues or other things with their Binance US stuff, or it dumps after they enable margin trading and launch their DEX and all this, like sell the news types of situations, that was the purpose of my thesis. So it may be wrong, and I certainly will probably lose that competition. But it was a thought that I wanted to get out of my head anyway, so I submitted it as part of this thing. So. Now
I like that. There's one other angle of that which I like, which we already talked about, which is the entire alt market shits the bed hypothesis. The part where Bitcoin dominance runs up to 80%, say.
Yeah, there's and no real abandon trading.
Yeah, there's no real money in Binance and Bitcoin trade. How much is Binance worth if it's just a place that sells Bitcoin? Nothing like what's priced in now.
Yeah, and there are other good places to trade those things. Like, you don't have to just trade those on Binance.
I mean, truly, it's kind of crazy to see BNB gaining so much, even gaining on Bitcoin over a period where altcoins are losing. Because I just don't understand how Binance is going to make money unless people trade altcoins.
Yeah. Well, I think they'll figure out ways to do stuff, but it's not necessarily something I'm super bullish on, because I think so much of their success is pretty well priced in. But there are risks to the thesis, which I identified when I wrote that. Aaron, I want to switch over and talk a little bit about
the screen old Libra. Has switched to Libra. We have teleported to a African marketplace where a woman prepares to do a Libra transaction.
Yeah,
that's so Libra. This is on the
they're going
Libra.
After it
dot
from
R
this
homepage.
Global currency like type of scenario, a true payment solution for the unbanked. And you, as on Libra.org, they have this like a picture of this African lady in a market ready to make a payment with her cell phone using Libra. You guys are on the forefront of talking about Libra, so tell me your baseline thoughts about this.
Well, my baseline thought is that I take it seriously. I think that Zuckerberg has proven that he can totally reinvent the company around someone else's idea. And, you know, will that idea be Libra? I think Facebook's probably running multiple games at once and seeing which one takes. But I do think, I said this on the show, and it's probably the most radical viewpoint I have on Libra, that if Libra truly works, when you're reading the Wikipedia page in 50 years, you'll be like, oh, wow, Facebook started out doing something called social networking? That's weird. I mostly knew them from making Libra. Like, yeah. I think that this idea is bigger than Facebook, which is a crazy thing to say. But I don't think it would have been crazy to say Bitcoin is a bigger idea than Facebook. And I think Libra, if it truly succeeded in the way that it's describing, it basically becomes like Bitcoin, Ripple, PayPal for the future of the world.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you just said. And I think Libra is fascinating and scary. Like WeChat is kind of already doing this, right? Like yes. Everybody pays with WeChat in Asia. So there's no way that Facebook doesn't look at something like WeChat and say, wow, we're way behind on payments. We got to catch up. We got to do something.
Can I punch in for 1 second here and say one thing that Mark Zuckerberg literally does, because he is spying on millions, maybe even billions of phones around the world that have Facebook accounts, is he looks at what else people are doing. And so whatever people are doing with payments in Asia, Mark Zuckerberg is tracking and literally to the user interface detail copying.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that their end game is to try to probably create something that can be as easily used as WeChat is in parts of Asia. And you think about all the properties with Facebook, Instagram and WhatsApp especially. Like, it's just billions of users who, if you enable them to take part in some kind of quick and easy payment solution, like what we can do with Venmo, except for the point y'all brought up that you have to have a bank to use Venmo. Tons of sense for Libra.
Yeah, I mean, if every Facebook account on Earth is a possible Calibra wallet, that makes it the biggest network of wallets, like right out of the gate, and it gives it a scale that already is like larger than PayPal and Venmo and those things. So I guess one of the things that has come up a lot, and we've been talking about it, is it does overlap with one of the biggest bull cases I have for Bitcoin, which is this idea that economies that are collapsing and currencies that are completely destabilized and subject to massive inflation would flee to Bitcoin for stability. And this is something we saw in Venezuela with people selling Bitcoin in cafes. So my question to you is Libra a better version of that? I mean, Libra is already on everyone's phone. It's actually backed by theoretically stable assets. That's the part where I think Libra and Bitcoin would potentially be competitive.
Yeah, I think you brought up something there at the very end that I find most interesting about Libra, which is it's not a stable coin in the sense of it's like dollar backed. It is truly a fully reserved currency, and it's backed by not only one thing. It's backed by all sorts of stuff, like T-bills or gold or any sort of collection of assets, and they probably have incredibly smart finance people trying to determine how they're going to back this asset to be stable as its own unit of account, but not pegged. And pegging something always makes it a challenge, but they're not trying to peg it. They're trying to make it stable. And that is a feature that could give it a significant advantage over Bitcoin, especially when Bitcoin is in bear markets, because people may not want Bitcoin. People may want Bitcoin when Bitcoin is booming, the same way that you might want to own gold instead of US dollars at times where gold is outperforming significantly. And I think I think Libra has a chance, but like, I cannot think, like y'all said, of a worse organization to be attached to than Facebook. Like, I don't care what they say. I don't trust that Facebook won't attempt to utilize, Libra transaction data in one way or the other for their own profit, because I just think that they will.
I find it completely naive to talk about Libra as anything but a Facebook project. I don't care that it's incorporated in Switzerland. Do not care that MasterCard and Uber each run their own node and Stripe has a node. It's a Facebook project. Facebook is very smart about shielding itself both legally and from a PR perspective, from some of the more out shit it gets into. I would look at it just as much as part of Facebook as Instagram or WhatsApp as, which is completely. So we have to judge it on Facebook's history of lying, ethics, bends, and total non-transparency. So I think that I would read Libra as basically being willing to do whatever it wants to do to further Facebook's interests. To that end, you brought up the stuff about it being a reserve. I don't totally understand that. So let's say I go buy $100 in Libra. Where does that money go?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, you are, you're sending that money to exchanges where it's traded. So Libra will be available for trade on exchanges, just like cryptocurrencies are. And just like in Forex, you utilize a foreign exchange brokerage to trade them, like Owanda or, you know, TD Ameritrade or whatever. So my understanding is that these nodes will have some, you know, some fashion, obviously, for operating with these exchanges to distribute and collect Libra, and that they will, you know, figure out how to manage their reserve.
The bull case here is that reserve is being held by Facebook instead of, in the case of Tether, like by Bitfinex, which I actually do trust Facebook more to not lose the money.
My understanding is that it's not just Facebook, but I'm not.
No, I mean, it's 27 node holders. I'm just kind of unclear on like where that reserve lives, basically. Who is in possession of it?
Yeah, honestly, I haven't looked into the way they're managing it enough to know exactly like who holds every bit of the reserve. But it is, they did talk about in the like basic white paper that it's a fully reserved currency of its own. And in saying that, that means that it'll be dynamic based on the reserve assets that back it.
So it could have some fluctuations. It just shouldn't be full on volatile.
Correct. That's correct. Whereas Bitcoin doesn't have, it's disinflationary, but the valuation of Bitcoin is based off of what the market perceives it to be. And that's based on things like its utility and speculative value. So it can be quite volatile. Whereas something that, if they say, hey, you know what, Libra is made up of 20% American treasuries, and it's made up of 20% gold, and it's made up of 20%, you know, Chinese yuan, and, you know, 20% worldwide real estate. Like, they have whatever. If they have like some kind of calculation of what it's based on, you should be able to create some form of like a pretty good understanding of that value that would change over time as those individual assets change. But when it's fully reserved, it's similar to a fully reserved, say, gold-backed currency, where you should be able to turn in, you know, one gold-backed currency unit for some valuation of gold itself. And that's what I didn't see was that would be that way forever. So at some point, it could drop its fully reserved status because Libra itself is strong enough to sustain a fractional reserve, which a lot of country currencies, as they're introduced, that happens, just like the U.S. You know, we were a gold-backed currency forever until we dropped the gold reserve status alongside the Great Depression.
I think that Facebook is designing Libra intentionally as an autonomous, rules-based system that can live on its own in the same way that Satoshi designed Bitcoin. That's ultimately a dodge of their responsibility to Libra. If Libra spins out of control and becomes wildly popular, loses its peg, people start speculating on it, whole countries start using it, Facebook can basically say, like, well, what can we do? Like,
We're just a node.
Control Libra. Yeah, we only have one of the nodes. Talk to MasterCard about shutting it down. And I don't think that is necessarily... I don't think that's necessarily what I predict will happen, that it will do that. But I think it's being designed so that it can become anything. I don't think it's like a caged product like Venmo that's like, well, Venmo is always going to be part of a publicly traded American company that operates in this kind of way based on these kind of regulations. If Libra starts to skirt regulation, I believe that Facebook will not step in because they're told to. I think they'll be like, yeah, talk to the Swiss authorities about this.
I think what gets interesting with that is, what if there's something as strong as, like, I'm obviously super speculating, but what if the United States or other countries pass a law that say it's illegal to be a node validator for a non-governmental currency? And
that or for Iranian transactions, let's use a very real possibility. Our sanctions say you cannot do business with Iran. Iran, many Iranians have Facebook accounts, I believe. How would Libra firewall off Iran from its system?
And what could happen in that scenario is, not only is it bad for Libra, but it's also bad for node validators or network participants in some way for other projects, for other semi-centralized cryptocurrency projects, like maybe EOS, which has like a low number of validating nodes, or those with a whole lot, like Ethereum or even Bitcoin miners. And I think that regulation... That could be the way, like, you regulate those entities.
Or those like Ripple and XRP, where there's like an extremely close relationship between a company. These to me are all like vulnerabilities, and they're not vulnerabilities that Bitcoin has. So I feel like the more you talk about Libra, you end up making the case for Bitcoin. And that's why I think Libra is ultimately bullish for Bitcoin. If you run enough of these scenarios far enough down and you imagine like Trump shutting down a like Libra-Iran embargo situation, ultimately your mind goes to, well, that's why Bitcoin is better. That's why Bitcoin's worth more. That's why Bitcoin is a more profound idea, because it is not beholden to those political concerns.
Yes, and with something like Libra, you can go after the node validators or whatever who are collectively controlling the system. And
if you'd like to go after a node holder, listen to the CoinTalk interview with Joe Lalas from Bison Trails.
He's one of the node validators.
He's pretty easy to find. So if you're trying to shut down the system, go right after him first.
That's exactly right. Whereas a real cryptocurrency, whether it be Bitcoin or Doge, but in those scenarios, like, you can make it illegal for them, but at the end of the day, participating in a network of a proper cryptocurrency is truly can be anonymous. Like, I can mine Bitcoin and mine Doge, and I can run a full node of these cryptocurrencies and be anonymous and participate whether a government tells me it's illegal or not. If MasterCard is one of the listed node providers for Libra and it's on the website, like, there are vulnerabilities for MasterCard to be able to continue to do that because the government can go after them.
And there are vulnerabilities to the consumer, because you just described an anonymous system, and now we're in a system where it interacts constantly with Facebook, which has shown an ability to discern identities even in totally anonymized situations by triangulating location data and the other apps on your phone. So I just can't imagine doing a like black market Libra transaction. I just feel like Facebook's going to be all over that instantly.
Yeah, and when you talk about permissionlessness with, you know, a digital currency, one of the permissions that you end up having with these types of things is the permission of the regulatory authorities to allow you to participate as a node participant. Whereas one of the permissionless components for something like Bitcoin is, like, as long as there's a computer willing to validate and mine Bitcoin, it will have some network security, even if it's greatly reduced because people aren't willing to participate because of legal threats. They can still do it. It's just you can't shut down Bitcoin. I sound like Pomp.
Well, let me give you a counter take that's more pro-Libra, which is, so I think you're right, and I think we're going to reach the point of many democracies choosing to at least try to shut down Libra. And maybe Facebook accounts in the U.S. eventually don't even have Libra. Could happen. The countries where there's not going to be a huge resistance to Libra are the second and third worlds, where most people don't have bank accounts. If Libra truly takes hold there and becomes the cell phone minutes, which are traded as a currency, and the stacks of U.S. dollars, which are a large percentage of wealth in a lot of countries, if people start going heavy into Libra, Libra becomes this country unto itself, this financial system unto itself that reaches across borders, and is all united with this single identity, which, you know, if you look in the Libra white paper, it mentions like Libra not just being a currency, but as a form of identity. There's a possibility that your Libra will be your passport at some point. I know this is crazy, but that's no more the bull case for Libra than Pomp's bull case is for Bitcoin.
Yeah, and when I say bull case for Bitcoin and talk about its permissionlessness, that doesn't mean the price has to go with it. Like, I actually think if all these countries made it illegal, the price would go way down for Bitcoin because its inherent value would go down as you're taking a lot of people off of the roster in terms of being willing to participate. But you can't shut it down because there will still be people willing to participate in Bitcoin. I agree with what you're saying about Libra. It could become, even against U.S. regulatory authorities being against it, or whoever, the European, whoever decides to be against it, there will be some countries that are like, whatever, do what you want, and it can become important in those circles. I don't think it could be a global passport, though, unless the biggest stakeholders are willing to say, like, they're in, too. But regionally or within countries, like in a place like the Sudan or somewhere where they have massive currency and government issues, it could be a better option for folks in those countries that are looking for stability, that are looking for the ability to like own, you know, the Libra that they have because it's on their phone. It's not under the monitor of their country or a country that has complete access to what they're doing. And that's one of the downsides of WeChat, is you would think like the Chinese have complete control and visibility of what's happening with WeChat. Otherwise, surely they would have shut it down already, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I have one further big looming question for Libra that I'm interested in your take on.
Sure.
Will we see Libra for Bitcoin transactions? Will we see a Libra Bitcoin market? And will we see Libra replacing fiat as a primary on-ramp for Bitcoin?
I think it's possible. It's really difficult dealing with U.S. dollars. That's what any exchange would tell you, is that dealing with U.S. dollars freaks them out. And that's why using something else can be attractive. Like these BNB pairs with altcoins and Bitcoin, the reason they're attractive in part is because it allows Binance to be unbanked. And when they're dealing with fiat, they're doing it through partners. They're not doing it themselves. Any exchange would rather send a bunch of money around using a digital currency than having to think about all the banking and junk that goes into dealing with dollars. The reason Bitfinex came up with USDT is because they said, we will manage this immense challenge of banking and all the crap that we have to do with fiat, so that then you can take your tethers and you can send them all over and do whatever with them. So if Libra is digital native from the start and never under the purview of all these things that the US dollar deals with, then it can be advantageous to do other digital currency stuff, transactions, speculation, whatever, utilizing some kind of Libra pair or whatever. there will be, I'm sure there'll be like wrapped Libra onto Ethereum the same way there's wrapped Bitcoin. And I'm sure that there will be a other ways to integrate, to deal with Libra and other cryptocurrencies. I think it'll be a first-class citizen in the market. I don't think it'll be as volatile as some people think because it's got reserve status, whereas most of these, they're only as valuable as the network participants agree that they are because of their utility, whether as sound money or value in smart contracts or whatever else. So yeah, I think it'll be real and interesting. I'm very curious to see what the true regulatory blowback will be upon Facebook and what they do about that, how they compromise, as y'all talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I still hold out that it's possible that Libra is meant as a negotiation tactic with regulators rather than like a finished idea. But if it works, and I think it has a chance to work, because I think Facebook has a proven track record of executing products so far as that it's like, this is not an ICO. These are better people working on this. This is the pros, for better or for worse. I think that makes it more dangerous also, but I think it will happen. And if it succeeds at all, and I think they've talked about building an API, I predict that we'll see wallets that allow you to hold both Bitcoin and Libra.
Oh yeah.
And potentially do atomic swap kind of, you know, frictionless trading between the two. I can see a future, particularly if, let's say, you buy Libra because your Argentinian or your currency is fluctuating, so you put a bunch of your money into Libra. I can see you then holding like your savings or your wealth in Bitcoin and trading it for Libra to do day-to-day transactions, almost in like an ATM model, except it's a digital ATM where you have like a real secure cross-borders, no one can touch it, cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, that when you need to go buy some stuff, you trade for some like Zuck bucks that they like accept wherever you are, whether you are in a market in sub-Saharan Africa or you're catching a bullet train in Asia, you can buy a ticket with Libra. And that we have a bunch of different kinds of ATMs that potentially let you pull out cash, ATMs that let you get Libra, ATMs will let you get other cryptocurrencies that are used in like more specific contexts. Bitcoin potentially could be the secure center of it all. I'd be more willing to make the trade-offs for the convenience of Libra if I was only holding nominal amounts of money in it that I could easily pop in and out of Bitcoin.
So I think you're describing to me the idea for Lightning, and I would rather not integrate any of my life with Libra if I can keep it in Bitcoin. The downside of that is the hyper volatile nature of Bitcoin. But a lot of people think that this volatility is reduced exponentially over time as something is more adopted and used and whatever. And maybe Bitcoin will continue to be able to rise in value to some degree, but be less volatile, at least when you think of it in terms of like decades instead of, you know, like 5 years or less.
The part I didn't understand, like I get Lightning as a user experience, although in my user experiences, it has not been like as great as, or it might need some work still in certain ways, but we still have this problem of how do I get my paycheck and put that into the thing that I then pay out with Lightning. We've still got this like long fiat jump. I would be willing to accept a Libra if Libra brought the dollar and Bitcoin closer together.
It may. I don't know how exactly it'll play out. I just know
I actually think this is going to end horribly. Just for everyone listening, this is like a I'm just making my case for these as like investments in futures. I think this is a horrific scenario.
Yeah. And one other thing is like, I think it's going to be really hard for too many other corporations who are directly opposed to Facebook to say, oh yeah, we'll hop on this train. And what I really don't want to see is a world where not only do we have all these fiat currencies, not only do we have all these proper cryptocurrencies, all these smart contract systems, all these dumb utility tokens, but now we have every corporate dollar in the world, and we've got Amazon bucks and Google bucks and everything else where they're all mirroring Libra too. Like, that just ends up being so stupid and crowded to me that it would be very frustrating. So I would rather Bitcoin, obviously, just be the one that accounts for these, you know, digital dollar scenario. And I like the contrast of, you know, we got Zuckbucks, but then we got Jack Dorsey is saying, you know, we don't want Twitter dollars or Square dollars. We're going in on Bitcoin and Lightning. I think that's an interesting contrasting play, because I think there's more to that, and it would be more welcomed from other corporate players that are interested in this digital cash, you know, future, but not tied to some specific corporation. I think Facebook's trying to play into let us be that for you and give us all this control. I don't think Amazon's going to take that laying down.
No, and furthermore, if you look at like how this war is sort of like aligning itself, what were we trying to get past with Bitcoin in the first place? It was the replay protection of people being able to wheel back MasterCard and Visa transactions and PayPal transactions, and having companies basically able to reverse transactions and manipulate digital money. That we need digital money that can't be manipulated. You can't come out with the Libra node holders and like number one and two are MasterCard and Visa, and be unclear like which side of this moon you're standing on. Like, this is a digital currency representation of credit cards, which are a form of digital currency. Credit card debt is a form of digital currency. It's traded. Like, yeah,
There was a episode of Planet Money where they talked about Venmo chargebacks and how Venmo is actually really averse to reversing transactions because they don't want to have to be able to provide chargeback type stuff easily. It's worth listening to. I'll link it up in the show notes because it's a little tougher to get your money back if you send it accidentally with Venmo than you would think.
That was a common Craigslist scam, would be someone would say, hey, I want to buy like an new iPhone. You go buy it with a Venmo, and then these people would have the transaction wheeled back. Or I think there may have been even more trickery than that.
Yeah, they have to. It's tough, but you basically have to go direct to your bank. Like, you can't do it through Venmo. You have to go, like, Venmo will immediately say, like, no, you can't. But the money may not be gone from your bank yet. So you have to go to your bank that your Venmo is connected to and tell your bank, hey, don't let this happen. And that's really the only way to get it back. And in that scenario, you have to catch it before your bank actually processes the money, or it could become trouble. Anyway, it's a good podcast, really interesting. And credit cards are really the only one with like the full chargeback protections and all that. And that's what ends up providing these scenarios where you have really high interest rates for credit cards, because that's what enables them to be able to protect their, you know, these consumers to be able to do these chargebacks for insane reasons sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with most of that, except I'm like, I actually think what credit cards do in wheeling back transactions, it's actually good. Like,
yeah,
they're basically saying, we know there's crime in the world. We don't want to be preyed on by criminals, nor will we allow you to be preyed on criminals through this account. So here's what we're going to do. If you start fucking with us, we're just going to change the data. So don't fuck with us. You know?
It's good, but like, it's expensive, I guess, is the point.
It costs money. And also it doesn't create a totally open financial system like Bitcoin has. It's a closed financial system that's actually to the benefit of most of the consumers in it, and to the detriment of a few people who pay interest on balances they leave.
I got one more question for you, because y'all talked about whether or not this Libra play was like sacrificial by Facebook. So like just throwing out a pawn that you expect to get eaten up by the government so that you can put something else there in its place. One of the things I didn't hear y'all discuss, and I wonder if you think it would be a, okay, never mind, we won't do this, but here we'll put this ahead instead. What if they do put forth, in lieu of Libra, a straight up clone of WeChat and Venmo and all those, and it's pretty well under the control of U.S. governments, but they feared if they just did that first that they would be scrutinized all the same. So instead, they put down through this really ambitious plan, and then if this gets shot down, they kind of wheel it back and put together just a totally normal Venmo clone, classic Facebook move instead. Do you think that's a reasonable scenario?
I think that could happen. I could also see an scenario in which, in addition to Libra, they like launch like Zuckbucks, and Zuckbucks are like pegged to Libra or something. Like, I wouldn't put anything past Facebook, like in terms of like the like pivot ability of this idea. But let me give you another weird like doomsday scenario. What if the government says, hey, no Libra, we're not down with Libra. France is banning it, the US is banning it, and they're like, oh, okay. Well, if you won't let us include Libra in our software, as Square has been using Bitcoin here, we'll just include Bitcoin in Facebook. And that's an infinitely worse situation for governments worldwide. We're going to be facilitating mass Bitcoin transactions. Oh, and like Square, we will be selling Bitcoin directly. Facebook is now a Gemini and Coinbase competitor.
I think we want to be the world's
largest
really unlikely
seller of Bitcoin. It's very unlikely, but I wouldn't look at what Facebook's leverage here as anything but basically extorting governments. Like, this is, they're trying to subvert governments. Libra is going to be an awesome money laundering tool. People are going to launder money with Libra if this happens, right?
I don't know. Probably. I mean, people figure out how to launder money with anything. So, sure.
Well, I think, but I mean, if you put an account on everyone's phone all over the world, and it's like, well, who can monitor this? It's like Visa, MasterCard, and Facebook. It's like, oh, okay. Well, that's who's in charge now. They've taken the government, you know, and the banks, which are regulated, out, and Facebook's like, we'll just do it ourselves. These are all just power plays, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
these are all just different ways.
You can walk this through toward, like, it's very dystopian. It's like all these dumb books coming true, you know?
Well, I mean, the alternate part here is, what if the government votes to break up Facebook and Facebook becomes a bunch of autonomous companies? It's possible that Libra ceases to be even a Facebook project in a few years.
It
becomes
like a weird
Mozilla. I've heard people
talk about this recently as it's like one of the few things that there's some bipartisan support for, is that some of these tech companies in particular are overly powerful. And there hasn't really been a tenure of significant corporate breakups since like Teddy Roosevelt. So it would be fascinating if that's the route that we go. I don't see it in the near future.
I think Libra would be one of the first things that Facebook volunteered to like break up with if they were regulated. I think it would be harder to pry Instagram out of the grasp.
I think Facebook to a degree, and then Amazon and Google maybe to a more significant degree, are like the three prime candidates to be broken up when you have a regulatory or, you know, legislative body willing to take on that battle.
Okay, final quiz. You have to hold one bag for the next
non-Bitcoin
3 years. It's not going to be a crypto bag. You either have to hold a Libra bag, a Tether bag, a US dollar circle bag. what would the other biggest stable coin be?
Okay, so it's basically which stablecoin would I value the most?
Yes, across all of the different approaches. If you not even value the most, which of you would you be just the most comfortable if I forced you to hold a bunch of your money for the next 3 years? Not be able to do anything with it.
I have pretty strong confidence that either Tether or USDC would be fine, or Maker as another one. Maker maybe has the most risks of those. So I'm going to go against everything I just said and say I'll hold my Libra, because as a gambler, there's some potential that Libra would be worth more if it does hit this speculative mania. Whereas all the other ones, I basically am either going to get a dollar or something worse than a dollar.
I'm taking Libra every time there. Partially just because there seems almost no chance it'll go away. It's like publicly traded stocks. If people hold, it's okay. You can just hold a position for many years because you just expect things to still exist. Facebook will still have a publicly traded stock in 3 years. Therefore, Libra will probably be solvent. Man, of those other ones, one of those is going to be like done in 3 years. In 3 years, one of those would be like on fire.
I think the one that makes me the most nervous is Maker, not because I think it's not interesting, but I think when you put so much stuff on those Ethereum smart contracts, like the chances of something blowing up and destroying the system seem fairly high to me.
I'm going to go with Tether as the one that I would be the most nervous about.
Yeah, you have a little bit too much Tether trutherism for me. Like, you guys on the show, like, you're more skeptical of Tether than I am. Like, I'm not near
everything I've learned about exchanges and things that have happened in the last like 5 years and like what was actually going on with all these exchanges, including Bitfinex. At least as a gambler, I'm like, Tether is the most like total catastrophe risk out of that set. Libra has almost zero total catastrophe. Can you imagine Libra like not being able to pay people out? It just doesn't seem like it would happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking Libra too. I'm just saying if you just made it square up, Tether versus Maker, I'll take Tether.
Yeah, I don't really know how Maker works. It's complicated, and that for that reason, I probably would not want any part of it.
Yeah, and that's why to me, like, I mean, people give Bitfinex a hard time, and they've done some dumb stuff, but they've been through the ringer, you know, and they've managed some challenges and made it out of them. They've had some crazy stuff along the way, but I think that for the most part, Tether will be fine. So it's, if I had to choose between the two, I'd take that. If you include Libra in the mix, I'll take Libra because why not? Speculation is fun.
Hey, let's load up our Libra bags. So what would you do if you wanted to get Libra exposure now? Just buy Facebook probably, right?
Yeah, which I'm not going to do. I have no desire for Libra exposure, but you're telling me hold on to one of these things that's supposed to be stable. Which one will you hold on to? I'll take Libra.
Right on.
All right, man. Everybody go to cointalkshow.com, I think.
It's cointalk.show.
Cointalk.show. And follow along with Aaron and Jay. They do a great podcast. And thanks for joining me to talk altcoins, Binance, and Libra. That was fun.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is always fun and weirdly makes me want to hold on to my Bitcoins.
All right. We'll catch y'all next time.
Later. Diamonds crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely breathe.